Grateful to all our musicians for their ministry to us this morning, aren't we? They all enhance our worship. Lots of things to take part in. One announcement that may have got away from us. On Wednesday this week, in this hall, there is a meeting of the Interfaith Forum, which is this time featuring beliefs and practices of the Salvation Army, and I'm speaking at that. So if you want to come and support that event, you're very welcome to do so. I think that's at 6:30. It's in the newsletter. I think 6:30 to 8, I think, on Wednesday this week. Other things that are happening at the moment is we've been asked to show some films and, that have been prepared by the Australia One team. This is all about the vision statement, and we've been asked to show these before Christmas. So in the spirit of obedience, we're going to do that. You'll see these cards or these posters around the building already, and it says, we briefly touched on it last week, our national vision. So it's a national vision for the combined territories. It's quite an inclusive statement. And this is one of the films that we were asked to show. So that's going to come on right now. Thanks, Scott.
Oh, how you should have seen us then. The Salvation Army. Strong, innovative, effective, and relevant. We were a sight to behold. You should have seen us when we first began. We were radical, founded by William and Catherine Booth in a time of great need and injustice. It was once said that our founders raised up the Salvation Army as an army of men and women, bringing light to the darkest places, bringing love to the cold streets, bringing Christ to drowning souls. These are our people, they said. It is for them we fight. And fight we did. We embraced the priesthood of all believers, that every man and woman had a role to play in the mission of God. There was no room for passengers in our army. Everyone was expected to fight. We held firm that social justice was the key to our mission of bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ to the streets, that evangelism and social reform are forever linked. As William himself said, to kill one is to slay the other. We embodied innovation, the pioneering spirit. We changed the world through music, through film, through new ways of working and new ways of worshiping. Oh, how you should have seen us then. It's so inspiring looking back. Looking back. But take a look at us now. Our churches are shrinking, and our social centres struggle to keep up with an ever-growing need. Our relevance and impact have faded away. The numbers are in and the numbers don't lie. In the last 10 years, we have lost nearly one-fifth of our people, especially in soldiers and adherents. Our churches are getting older, and an entire generation of young people have all but disappeared. But in these numbers, there are still signs of who we once were. Our mission to those battling hardship and injustice is still reflected by the people in our halls. And our inclusion of the first Australians is a good first step on a longer road. We see glimmers of hope, torches burning in the night. There are places where need is being met like it never has before. Places where the gospel is opening doors that once were closed. Places where salvation and the love of Jesus is breaking through. These glimmers are important. They are encouraging. And they show us that God is not finished doing his work through the Salvation Army. But we cannot. We must not be content. Our congregations are aging and declining, while our social expressions face ever-increasing community need. If our size and strength continue on this path, we cannot, we will not impact our nation the way we once did. Our community, our culture, and our world is changing. And we must adapt. To fail to adapt is to become inward-focused, removed from others and irrelevant. We are not content with good work in just a few places. We are not content with just a few examples. We have a vision of a nation impacted by the love of Jesus. We ache for God to use the Salvation Army in a way that is life-changing and relevant. We have a vision of a future where social and spiritual are indistinguishable. We have a vision of an army where transformation, focus, pioneering, and accountability aren't just words. They're essentials. When that is who we are, the Salvation Army, fulfilling its mission, sharing the love of Jesus, and meeting people's needs in His name, we will be empowered by the Spirit of God. And oh, you will see us then.
Fairly sobering stuff, isn't it? But God is not done with us. I do not believe that God is done with us yet. He is still calling people. He is still reaching out into people's lives. He is still transforming lives. He is still calling us to take our part, as it says in this statement, to transform this nation one life at a time. One life at a time is all that's asked. And whilst there is much there that we need to take seriously and much that we need to take seriously in those numbers, let's also remember that God is bigger, that He still has a plan for us. Our task is to be faithful. And He's the one who's unchanging. In a world that changes, in a world that we find hard to understand, He still stands supreme over it all. That was essentially the message of that entire chapter of Ephesians chapter 1 that was read for us. Supremacy of Christ, the one who's called us into life with Himself. But one of the words used in that clip was innovation, and that's the hook line for today. That's the title we're looking at today. We're concluding this series on our church life. We look the last look today at our church life survey statistics. I know you'll all be disappointed. There's about 60 more pages of stats and graphs I could have showed you. They are not secret. If you want the whole thing, just ask me. It will be provided for you. But these are a couple of things that came up in our results, which as I looked at that, I thought that really comes under the heading of innovation. And that was long before I saw that Vision film clip, which talked about our innovativeness, if that's a word. So a couple of slides, please. Scott, thank you. So this one's just about our attitudes, our willingness to support new initiatives. 28% of us weren't sure about things that are new. These numbers are not dissimilar, actually, to the national picture either. So we're not untypical. But look at that, 44% plus 29%, whatever that adds up to, agree or strongly agree that we want to support new things. That's very encouraging. And if that's you, and a new thing comes along you could be part of, then don't sit back and wait for someone else to do it. All right? Next one, please. The values and priorities come up. Again, very similar pictures to national pictures. We want to prioritize encouraging new approaches to mission, a clear vision. I know that's been difficult in the days of change that we've been going through, but the vision hasn't essentially changed since the Great Commission. The vision is still Jesus and is still proclaiming Jesus. And you can put whatever words you like around that, but it's still about Him and still about what He's about. But if we need help understanding that, then we'll take that on. 32% want to prioritize ministry to children and youth. Probably we all do, actually. It's just that that's what came up as a top one. Our openness to cultural diversity, I found that a bit challenging, actually. 12% of us say we're open to that, but if we're honest, we don't really reflect that, do we? Something to think about for the future. And then again, children and youth come up again, 13%. So, those are just numbers. But they're your numbers, they're what you said about our life in our church. What you thought was important. But then we have this whole national thing going on and this our temptation to be despondent. You know, that film that begins, "Oh, you should have seen us then." Don't forget that the film also ends, "Oh, you will see us then," when we get back to being faithful to what it's really all about. Innovation, doing new things, a call to action, a call to return to the ways of proclaiming the gospel with innovation. The early Salvation Army was innovative. But it wasn't just innovative for innovativeness' sake. That really isn't a word. I should find out what that word is. It just wasn't about being innovative because they wanted to be innovative. They were innovative because they were unashamed about proclaiming the gospel. They were unashamed and completely intentional about who they were and whose they were. And that's what we're called to do today. Maybe that's harder for us, I don't know. So what do you do when you want to find out what God has to say about innovation? Well, you turn to a 2,000-year-old text. So here we are in the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 2. And we pick up the story in verse 18. Mark's gospel is quite an action-packed gospel. It's the shortest one, and in a sense, which Mark's all of Mark's stories propel us very quickly to the last week of Jesus on earth. But there's a lot of things going on in a fairly pacey narrative, and we can miss some of the details if we're not careful. So, Mark's gospel, chapter 2, from verse 18. Once, when John's disciples, that's John the Baptist, of course, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, some people came to Jesus and asked, "Why don't your disciples fast like John's disciples and the Pharisees do?" Jesus replied, "Do wedding guests fast while celebrating with the groom? Of course not. They can't fast while the groom is with them. But someday the groom will be taken away from them and then they will fast. Besides, who would patch old clothing with new cloth? For the new patch would shrink and rip away from the old cloth, leaving an even bigger tear than before. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins, for the wine would burst the wineskins, and the wine and the skins would both be lost. New wine calls for new wineskins." One Sabbath day, as Jesus was walking through some grain fields, his disciples began breaking off heads of grain to eat. But the Pharisees said to Jesus, "Look, why are they breaking the law by harvesting grain on the Sabbath?" Jesus said to them, "Haven't you ever read in the scriptures what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He went into the house of God during the days when Abiathar was high priest, and broke the law by eating the sacred loaves of bread that only the priests are allowed to eat. He also gave some to his companions." Then Jesus said to them, "The Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people, and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even over the Sabbath." And this for us is the gospel of Christ, the good news about Jesus. We're told that both John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. And it's easy to think, well, that was about the same thing. But it wasn't. John the Baptist had disciples of his own, and we read about how some of those went on to become disciples of Jesus, and not all of them did. And if you read back into chapter 1, John the Baptist has been arrested. He doesn't get executed by Herod until chapter 6 in Mark's Gospel. So Jesus knows about John. And Jesus knows that John the Baptist's disciples are fasting because they're praying for John. They're praying for him. They're praying for his safety. He's in danger. So their fasting is about that specific need that they had to pray for their leader. The Pharisees are fasting too, but they're not fasting for praying for John the Baptist. The Pharisees fasted a lot. That was how they did their spirituality. Now, in the Hebrew law, in the Jewish law, there's actually only one day that God says to the people, that's the day you fast. That's the Day of Atonement. very sacred day in a Jewish calendar, sacred day still. So just one day in the law that you would fast. But if you're a Pharisee, or in fact if you're anybody, you can fast at any other time as well. And the Pharisees did a lot of fasting, because that's how they liked to pray, and that's how they connected to God, and that was important to them. Jesus also has things to say to them about the fact that sometimes, and we must be careful not to lump all Pharisees together, because sometimes we think, oh, the Pharisees are the bad guys in black hats, and the disciples are the good guys in white hats, and it's not that simple. These were people who took their faith seriously, who understood their scriptures deeply, and had a particular worldview, which was informed by their history. Hear that again. Here was a group of people who took their faith seriously, knew their scriptures deeply, and had a worldview that was formed by their history. Because that's played out in all sorts of groupings of people, including the groupings of people that are called salvationists, if we're honest. So here are the Pharisees, and they're fasting. And Jesus had said to some of them, well, your fasting is just about outward show. It's not really about what's going on inside. But they were struggling to make sense of the world they lived in too. We should learn to be gentle on Pharisees. Jesus has his strongest words in the Bible, his strongest words for religious professionals and religious people. So when Jesus has got things to say to Pharisees, there's a good chance he's got something he wants to say to me, and a good chance he's got something he wants to say to you. So let's go easy on sincere people who understood their scriptures and had an approach to life that was formed by the world they lived in and by their traditions and history. Jesus makes the point, well, John's disciples are fasting because John's in prison. Their master's been taken away from them. But right now, I'm here with my disciples, and now is not the time for fasting and lamenting. That time will come, says Jesus, knowing full well how his story would play out. But right now, I'm doing something new. God is doing a new thing. He was doing a new thing in their world, and he is doing a new thing in our world. Dramatic pause for amens and hallelujahs. God was doing a new thing in their world, and he is doing a new thing in our world. In recovery circles, they say, fake it till you make it. If you don't believe it, just keep convincing yourself it's true, because one day you'll wake up and it is true. God is doing a new thing in our world. There has never been a greater opportunity for us to proclaim Christ and what he means to us in a world where all sorts of things are changing around us and all kinds of different perspectives on life are available. We have something to say, and it's called good news. There is a world that needs to hear about good news. There is a world that needs to encounter good news people. And I'm really sorry, friends, but you are it. You are the good news people. So if you're going to go out of here miserable, not terribly sure what's going on, and pretty much thinking that it's all over for the Salvation Army and the Christian Church in general, then you won't be a good news person. But if you take hold of a new thing that Jesus is doing in your life, in my life, in our church, and in our day, then we might just stand a chance at transforming Australia one life at a time with the love of Jesus. And that's all we're being asked to do. Can we get hold of that? We might have all sorts of views about Australia One and Hope Rising and all the stuff that goes on, and I get that and I hear it, and I've been part of those conversations too. But there comes a point for good old-fashioned obedience where we just say, okay, that's where we are. Let's just grab this and get on with it and make it happen, because Jesus is calling us back into the places where he would have us be. And the more time we want to spend in here debating the language and this, that, or the other, well, guess what we become, friends? We become Pharisees. People who know our faith well, know our scripture well, and have a worldview that's formed by our tradition. And it wasn't helping them, and it frankly isn't helping us. Jesus is doing a new thing in the world, and the amazing thing is, despite everything he knows about your life and mine, he still says, could you come and be part of that? Despite what he knows about you and me, there's not a day that doesn't just bowl me over when I realize my own brokenness and frankly uselessness. Jesus is still saying there's something you could do today. There's nothing special about me. So I think he might be saying the same thing to some of you. If you're going to tell me you're too old, too ill, too this, too that, Jesus is still saying there's a task you can do. There is something you can do. There are sign-up sheets galore on that table out there. But there are sign-up sheets written across this community for our bringing the good news of the kingdom into it. Not literal sign-up sheets. So that would be quite cool, wouldn't it? If you're just walking about town and there was a sign-up sheet that said, go speak to this person, or be nice to the person in the post office, or even if you do fall asleep in a cinema, don't disturb the person next to you. Ask me what the film was and I'll tell you why. You'll know why I fell asleep. God is doing a new thing in our day. The analogies Jesus used in this passage in Mark's Gospel would have made sense to his audience. New cloth and old cloth don't mix. Old wineskins would be dry and cracked. New wine would still be fermenting. And that process of fermentation, I know salvationists don't like to talk about alcohol, but let's do that. When you have that going on, it expands. Anyone ever made ginger beer? And how many bottles have you had explode when you do ginger beer? And you put your ginger beer things in a secret shed so that when they do explode, you've got to pick up glass in the kitchen. Luna's sister used to make ginger beer. It was the best thing ever for getting a layer of grime off your car. That's kind of irrelevant, but anyway. The new wine would just explode the skin. It couldn't contain it. And Jesus is saying, basically, you've got this narrow construct of how you think faith should be and how you think the spiritual life should be, and you've kind of got God in a box. But something new is happening, and your old way of looking at it, your old system, your old approaches, you literally cannot contain the new thing that God is doing. New wineskins are needed, as well as new wine. And when God says to us that when anyone comes to Christ, they become a new person, that's what's going on. That's the wineskin transaction, actually. That's the point where you can become able to contain a new thing that he's doing. But we need to learn not to put God and the work of Christ into narrow constructs that make us comfortable. C.S. Lewis, Narnia Chronicles. Aslan, the lion, is the analogy for Jesus, or allegory, to be precise, in C.S. Lewis's stories. And in Prince Caspian, Lucy, one of the children, meets Aslan again. Now, if you follow the story, they've been trying to battle the forces of evil, and they've been trying to do it on their own, and they've been trying to do it the way they always used to. See what happens when Lucy meets Aslan. Thanks, Scott.
Aslan! I knew it was you. The whole time, I knew it. But the others didn't believe me.
And why would that stop you from coming to me?
I'm sorry. I'm too scared to come alone. Why wouldn't you show yourself? Why couldn't you come roaring in and save us like last time?
Things never happen the same way twice, dear one.
If I'd come earlier, with everyone who died, could I have stopped that?
We can never know what would have happened, Lucy. But what will happen is another matter entirely.
And you'll help?
Of course. As will you.
Oh, I wish I was braver.
If you were any braver, you'd be a lioness. Now, I think your friends have slept long enough, don't you?
Well, it sounds a bit quiet, but basically, as I says, things do not happen the same way twice. Things do not happen the same way twice. This is, and we know this. If you read the gospel stories, just look at the stories when Jesus heals blind people. Never the same way twice. Some people he puts mud in their eyes. Some people he sends to go and wash. Some people, it's always different. And the Pharisees' problem was they were wanting God to do what he had done before in exactly the same way he'd done it. They believed that if the whole nation could keep the whole law for one day, then God would rescue them from the Romans just as he had done from the Egyptians. And in the process of thinking that that's how it should be, in this narrow construct, this narrow understanding, this putting God in a box, they missed out on a new thing that was happening before their eyes. Jesus had come and announced the kingdom. Something new and exciting and inclusive was happening. And Jesus has this vision, this understanding that his part in the whole story is about making creation new. It wasn't just about rescuing the nation anymore. It isn't about your individual salvation and mine anymore, not that it ever was, actually, but it is about the recreation and the renewal of the whole world. And that's the cosmic project that we're invited to be in. But if we decide that we know how best God should act and work and answer our prayers, and that's me, and it might be you too, I know what I need, I know what God should do for me, and I know how he should do it and when. And my job in prayer is to remind him about that. We all do that, don't we? Don't we? We know what we need, we know when we want it, we know how God should do it, and every now and again we just think that prayer is a chance to remind him about that. But things don't happen. They aren't done the way we think they are. They're not done the same way twice, Lucy learns from Aslan. She also learns an important lesson about faith. I was too scared to come to you, she said. The others didn't believe me. Well, why would that stop you? Said Aslan to her. And sometimes we're too scared to step out because other people don't understand what we're doing. We're too scared to step forward in faith because other people's negativity holds us back, and we allow it to. We're too scared to step forward and do the new thing that we believe Jesus is calling us to because it's too easy and too comfortable to stay amongst the familiar. And we're all in that place from time to time as well. And the Pharisees and their party, sincere people though they were, could not understand the new thing that was happening in front of them. New wineskins were needed. New understandings were needed. They go on to this conversation about Sabbath. You're not sticking to the Sabbath rules. Your disciples are pulling off the grain. This has happened before as well. And Jesus unpacks to them and explains to them that the Sabbath wasn't about keeping to the rules, but was about allowing people to encounter God. So get back to what it's actually about. See, there was nothing wrong with the ancient pathway, but a new understanding was needed. There is nothing wrong either with the ancient pathways of our faith. The call that is ours to be a people steeped in Scripture, seeking after holiness, living a life of prayer and service. Nothing wrong about the not quite so ancient pathways of salvationism either. We have a unique calling and a unique purpose for which God raised us up. And for all that we might grumble about things changing in our day, I think we can recognize that ours is a history of innovation and provocative living. And much about what we're being asked to do in this day is not actually that new. We talk about communities of hope. Well, there's one of those in Acts chapter 6, when the church is trying to provide a practical need to people who needed it. We talk about kingdom tables. You find those all over the Gospels, when Jesus sits on hillsides and talks to his friends about the kingdom of God. Ancient pathways, but just rediscovering new ways of doing it. We're still asked to do those things. What looks like is new actually isn't new, but what we're being asked to do is to get back to the reason why these things are important. And we're not alone. In the Aslan story, Aslan doesn't show up until someone asks him to. They were trying to solve the problems on their own. But don't miss out on this amazing promise. When Paul is praying for this fledgling church in Ephesus, and we sang these words earlier, he prays that they would grow in their knowledge of God, that their hearts would be flooded with light to understand the confident hope he's given to those he has called. That's you and me. Paul's prayer is for you and me, as well as for the Ephesians, that our hearts will be flooded with light so that we can understand the confident hope he's given to us. You have been given a confident hope. You've been given a confident hope. I have been given a confident hope. So why would we go out of here with anything less than confident hope that we want to offer out to other people, however we might do it, in the unique places where you are? Confident people bearing confident hope. Because we are not alone. The same mighty power, says Paul, that raised Christ from the dead and seated him in the place of honor at God's right hand is available to you. I pray also that you will understand the incredible greatness of power for us who believe him. This is the same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead and seated him in the place of honor. The same power that raised the dead Jesus in that tomb, raised him to life, moved that stone, and had him standing alive in that garden, the same power that did that is available to you. And as far as I know, none of you are dead yet. So if God's power can do that for someone who's dead, what can it do for you who's not dead yet? Despite appearances to the contrary. No, come on. We are people of confident hope. Let's grab hold of that confident hope and take it out into a world who desperately needs to know what good news is about. New wineskins are needed. They are you and they are me. The thing that God makes new that can contain the promise that we're being asked to carry into the world. Well, as with all these series, there's a challenge card for you this week. And it's one that's, again, fairly simple. And you can stick it on your fridge and ignore it, or leave it in your Bible and ignore it. Or you could maybe make this part of your prayerful response. Take hold of that power. Resolve to support new opportunities for mission, to seek the Lord for his leadership in your life, and to see the new thing he is doing. Don't miss out on what he has for you, and I'll do my best not to miss out on what he has for me. So we're going to take time to respond. The cards will be given out as we do that. We're going to sing with the band's assistance, please. It's an old song, but words that carry a contemporary message. Thou hast caused me from the byway to proclaim thy wondrous love. Thou hast placed me on the highway that to all men I may prove there is mission in my living. There is meaning in my word. Saviour, in my daily striving, may this message yet be heard. I invite you to remain seated. We'll sing these verses. And as you do that, these cards will be handed out to you. If you need to make a prayerful response at this place, that's always available. And see the new thing that God has for you this day.